Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Music Nomad, our favorite guitar maintenance tool manufacturing masters. You should check them out on musicnomadcare.com or on social media with @musicnomadcare. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Naomi McLeod.
Hello.
And Blake Weiland.
Hi there.
That's right, dear listener. We've been joined by the one and only Blake Weiland from Chasing Tone and the Tone Mob Podcast. It's lovely to have you back. We were saying just before we started, this is like, what did we say? This is the fifth time you've been on Guitar Nerds.
I think it's either the third or the fourth. I can't remember. Right. I feel like it's the fourth. That sounds right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Across a decade, which that's not enough. I mean, there is 8 hours difference between us, but yeah, I feel like I've let you down.
Well, you've been on. I think twice, and then the rest of the nerds have been on. I'm going to have Naomi on. That's never happened. So who's really good. Letting who down Ooh. Around here, you know?
That's good. Thank you. You've made me feel better. It's actually you that's let me down. So that's good. I can.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
I can, didn't I realize can... this was the gaslighting episode. off to a good start.
There we go. Yes indeed. Well, we have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. I don't think I've ever put so many notes in the podcast discussion document, I'm sure we'll talk about two or three of them and then our time will be up, dear listener, but we are going to try and get through as much as possible. Before we do, I have to be a little bit serious and talk about the awful invasion by Russia into Ukraine that's happening at the moment, and the tragedy of that entire situation. Guitar Nerds are going to be, we donate money every quarter to a new charity, so we're just going to bump that up and donate a percentage of Guitar Nerds revenue this month to some charities that are helping people on the ground in Ukraine. But I just wanted to kind of talk about ways that you can help if you want to. GlobalCitizen.org have written a fantastic article on 9 meaningful ways that you can help Ukraine, because it is a minefield out there of charities that you can donate money to. It's hard to know what's going to have the best impact and the best effect when it's needed so immediately and so real time. So it's great that Global Citizen have put this article together. That article is linked in the description of this podcast. But as I say, if you just want to Google it, then it's Global Citizen, and the article is 9 meaningful ways that you can help Ukraine. There are a lot of charities on there that are global. So if you're in the States, then International Medical Corps is a great way of doing it. The Ukrainian Red Cross, which is being forwarded on all the Red Cross websites, you know, no matter which country you're in, People in Need, and Nova Ukraine as well. But I won't list them all. It's all in the article. Please donate if you can, and you know, and help the Ukrainian people in this awful time. Anyway, serious stuff out the way. I've done my serious bit. We've got Blake on the podcast. Obviously, we've got Blake on the podcast because we want to talk about the fact that he has united the two things most important to him in the world: guitars and pizza. Which is, how many pedals have you released now? This is another Tone Mob pedal.
Yeah.
Because there's the fuzz. The fuzz came in various iterations, various finishes. What is this, like the third pedal you've done?
There's actually been quite a few more. This is the only one since the Model 1 that has been so heavily branded as a Tone Mob product. The rest were more branded as the company I was working with products, and they would generally come in like a cool Tone Mob wooden box, and I would help push them. I helped with the creation of those things, but this is the first one that has actually had, you know, my brand and now my face, you know, on the thing. So it's a little bit, it feels a little more official, but I've done we did the original Model 1 in several iterations. I did three versions of the Demogorgon with Adventure Audio, who sadly is no longer around. So that pedal's, those pedals are exceedingly uncommon. And I did a collaboration with Spruce Effects called the Tremolo, which was a tremolo and fuzz. I did this was years ago, as close as possible recreation of my EHX Big Muff with Tomcat pedals using new old stock components and everything. I've done a silver Pelotar and now the Pizza Fuzz. I don't think I'm leaving it. Oh, no, the Typhons V1 and V2 with Fuzz Rocious. Those were phenomenal. And now the Pizza Fuzz. Yes, I believe I've caught everything up to date now. But they've all been dirty and fuzzy. And now this is, you know, we're continuing that trend.
Yes, you're very much continuing that trend. Now, I am sure, you know, that everyone listening to, pretty much everyone listening to this podcast is well aware of this Big Ear Tone Mob collaboration Pizza Fuzz. But for, you know, if there's anyone out there who's not aware, can you please describe this insanely unique pedal?
Yeah, so basically it is a fuzz pedal that is in a slice of pizza. It's a photorealistic printed piece of pizza. The enclosure was custom made to be triangle shaped. And it's printed on three sides, and it is actually a real piece of pizza from a place called NY Pie in Nashville that was specifically chosen by Grant and Karen from Big Ear because they had, well, first of all, they love the pizza, but they sampled pizzas from all around the city, and they also found that this was the most photogenic, so
I love that selection process.
Yeah, so they
awesome.
They took a picture of the pizza, and then it for some reason, this really makes me happy. There's a picture of Karen eating the slice that became the slice of pie. So, like, it's like the most famous lunch in the world. It's so, so satisfying to me. But yeah, it was a big process, and both of them are so detail oriented that like no stone was left unturned. We even went as far as to try to figure out how to make it smell like pizza when you open the box.
Whoa.
We didn't achieve that, but we did try. There were several things tried, and they all smelled horrible. So we were like, we'll just not have it. We'll just not have it do that. You know, it's just not worth it sometimes. But everything else was pretty much analyzed.
There was a company that did a cinnamon drive, and I can't remember what they're called. It began with A. Oh, damn! But their pedals certainly came in a little velvet slip that smelt of cinnamon. I was very very much into that. That was a good move. Certainly,
like that.
You've gone to town though. Even if you didn't get the smell, the everything else about its packaging, you've really followed through on the slice of pizza as well.
Yeah, everything was very much inspired by old New York style pizzerias. Grant and Karen lived in New York City for a long time. I've been there several times myself. And so we wanted it to feel like it's why it's slice of pie. It's supposed to be very New York, you know, very, you know, some people came after us because we're like, that's not right. Our pizza in Italy doesn't look like that. And we're like, no, this is New York that we're talking about here. That's what we're shooting for. That whole vibe is New York City. And in fact, Big Ear Pedals used to be called Big Ear NYC before they moved. Yeah, New York is very much a part of the Big Ear DNA. So they wanted to keep that. And, you know, we just tried to think of everything. I mean, the hours on the phone that I spent with Grant, like going over every detail, you know, we did an entire podcast about how much time and thought went into this thing. I know it seems like, oh, how silly, which it is silly, but it also is like a true labor of love, because we all three of us really truly do love pizza this much. And and so we wanted to get it right, and I think we did. You know, it turned out to be worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the stuff that the slice of pie comes with includes, you get a napkin, right?
Right. You get one of the nice napkins. You know, it's definitely a disposable napkin, but it is a very heavy grade disposable napkin.
Nice. That's what you want. And you get stickers, standard. That's great. You get a pizza pin, right?
Yep.
You get big ear plectrums, to be expected. Mm-hmm. And then you get temporary tattoos.
Yes.
And two packs of crushed red pepper.
Yes, just in case. If that's your flavor, you get two packs of crushed red pepper, just in case. Right. And they are real crushed red pepper packs. You could open those up and put those on your pizza if you wanted to and eat
Amazing.
It.
Yes. Amazing.
I'm in love with everything about this puddle.
The attention to detail is just brilliant. It's insane. Even the manual looks like a proper New York pizza menu as well, which is which is great.
Yep. It's everything we could think of. I mean, and there are things that we thought about including, like the smell, that just didn't end up working out. We thought about including, you know, the little miniature table looking things that keep the box from falling on the pizza, but it just didn't quite, we already had the box finished and it just didn't quite fit. And it was like, I guess we'll have to give that one up. But in that process is where we came up with the napkin. Like, well, we could do the napkin and that'll actually help protect it in shipping on top of being kind of fun and cool. One thing we didn't expect, and we totally should have seen it coming, is when people did the unboxing videos for YouTube, people saw that it was a napkin, and then people were like, I know what to do with this, and they would tuck it into their shirt, like they were about to feed. But yet, they didn't know yet. They didn't know, like, what was under the napkin. They knew it was pizza-themed, of course, at that point, but they didn't know that it was literally a slice of pie.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's such a great idea because you've managed to make something that's totally unique and weird without it being at the sacrifice of pedalboard real estate. Like it's the same, you know, you're not taking up any extra room.
That was a huge consideration because, and even after it came out, people said, how in the world is this going to work on a board? And we're like, well, does a top mount 125B enclosure work on your board? Because it's the same size, you know, and that was very much patterned on what is typically considered to be this quote-unquote standard pedal size. And this is the first bigger pedal that has top mount jacks. Grant has a personal vendetta against top mount jacks, but he's given that up in the quest for making this as functional as it could be. And I think he's admitting that he's lost the battle, and I think he will be converting his other stuff to it soon. But this is the first bigger pedal to properly feature top mount jacks. And a lot of pedal builders couldn't believe it because Grant's been very vocal about that over the years. So.
What doesn't he like about top mount jacks?
I don't especially
care either way, but it seems very clear and obvious the advantage of a top mount.
I don't personally care that much either. That's never been something that I bother with. He's explained this to me before and I can't remember all of the whys. I think in his mind, and I don't think he's entirely wrong about this, depending on what cables you use, especially if you use the 90 degree power connectors, it actually becomes kind of more of a pain. If you aren't using just the right cables, top mount tends to not actually offer as many advantages as it may seem and can have a few disadvantages. And that's why I don't personally care. I'm just like, whatever. It's gonna be fun. But for this, it was totally necessary. There's no way we were going to put side jacks on this and have them be at a weird angle. You know, that wasn't going to work. So, it's got top mount jacks. It's the same width as a 125B normal pedal enclosure that we've come to know and love. And it'll totally fit anywhere and maybe in some places where one of those wouldn't fit, actually.
Well, yeah, I mean,
yeah, you could, a good point, yeah.
You could get three of these and have them, you know, the in the negative space.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like top to tail.
Exactly.
Nice. Exactly. Yeah. Different settings each.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a really amazing overall presentation. I know it's always the gear itself that matters. But I find things like packaging and sort of how a piece of gear is merchandised to be super important as well.
It's a lovely collector's item.
Yeah, absolutely.
But tonally, so let's talk about the actual pedal rather than the presentation. Did you spend as much time on the sound of the pedal as you have on its presentation?
Definitely. I mean, that was like the main thing. It's one thing to get people's attention and get them to want the thing, but at the end of the day, if they get it and it sounds stupid, then it's kind of a letdown for everybody. So mm-hmm. we spent a ton of time voicing the circuit. And if you look at the whole thing, we don't like to say it outright because I think it's more fun when people realize on their own, but it is very obvious what the roots of it are. You know, it's called slice of pie and it's in a triangle shaped enclosure.
Wow.
So you can infer where the roots may be from that. Some people have heard that and they're like, oh man, this is so, there are so many layers to this silly project. So
it's like that shower thoughts subreddit.
Yes, exactly. But we worked with Zach Broyles from Mythos Pedals, who everything that guy touches just sounds incredible. He's got such good ears. I've played almost all of his pedals, I think, at this point. And they're just fantastic. And he's such a good dude. But once he got the foundation of the circuit laid out and working, and to a point where Big Ear could mess with it, they spent a ton of time on their own going back and forth tuning the thing. I don't even know how many weeks they spent doing that. They're just going back and forth, replacing different components, and coming back with fresh ears. And Grant knew from the beginning, I was like, I want it to have more mids and interact with the guitar's volume control in a more meaningful way than something of this type of circuit normally would. And, you know, so we had a clear goal going into it. You know, I wanted to, I very explicitly said, I need this to work on baritone guitar exceedingly well. And we went from there. And by the time they sent it to me, it had already been through tons and tons of changes. And a bunch of the Nashville pedal people actually had put their ears on it. They didn't know what the full package was going to be, but they would come in. We had Andy Pitcher. We had AWOL pedals. We had Jonathan Diaz from the Effects Loop. I'm not even actually sure myself how many different people lent their ears to the testing phase of it. Before it was sent to me, basically I was faced with two choices. And much like ordering a pizza, I had, you know, two good choices. It was just, which one did I prefer? And right. So we, you know, there was a capacitor and a very important part of the tone stack that I was A-B-ing back and forth. And it was pretty clear right away which one to go with. So yeah, a ton of time was spent on that. It sounds good on everything that I've used it on. So standard guitar, of course, but it is a ripping bass fuzz. Like, it kills on bass. Patrick Hunter did a bass demo for us. I did a bass demo, even though Patrick's is way better. And it works on everything. So yes, to answer your question in the longest way possible, there was a ton of time spent getting it to sound really, really good and be really, really versatile.
The time has come on this week's podcast to hear some gear, so let's check out some of the complete guitar amplification and effects solutions available from Neural DSP and their plugins. We've teamed up with Neural DSP a bunch over the last year or two. Matt and I are big fans of what they do, and we'd like you to become part of that. So use discount code GuitarNerds at neuraldsp.com for 30% off any of their plugins. Worth noting that you get 14 days free with any of their plugins with no credit card required, so if you just want to see what all the fuss is about, you've got a whole 2 weeks on them with any of their amps and effects. Now this week I'm checking out the Pelini amp suite. With this suite you get a clean crunch and lead amp, three separately voiced EQs, a compressor and drive, delay and reverb, and a cab sim with six microphone options, with up to two microphones being placed at any one time. Not to mention a whole bunch of artist and factory presets that offer more than enough tonal options for anyone. The thing I love most about this suite is its versatility. Here's the Edge of Breakup preset played with a finger-picked Gres Mendocino. Dynamic, traditional, valvey. Here's the Neural DSP preset for big riffs. I can't believe these tones are from the same suite. And finally, this next one is just me expanding the time effects. The delay has a lovely tape saturation control that makes this digital plugin sound gorgeously organic. That's the Pelini Archetype plugin suite from Neural DSP. Check it out on neuraldsp.com and use discount code GuitarNerds at the checkout for 30% off any of their amp and effects plugins.
Well, I thought one of the places where it, you know, one of the applications that it really seemed to shine and just had gorgeous, lovely harmonics, just those sort of interactive washy fuzzy harmonics that you want from a sort of a Big Muff style pedal, was when you were playing baritone through it. That for me, that was the this pedal really shone in that sort of that halfway house between guitar and bass.
Yes, medium guitar, as I've heard it described.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's why I did the baritone demo. I didn't realize Ryan from 60 Cycle was also going to do baritone in his video. I kind of thought baritone is very much 90% of what I'm playing these days, so I better be the one to do that demo. And it, with that Grez, get out of town. It sounds absolutely brilliant.
Yes, yes, it certainly did. And Grez is something I do want to talk to you about. I know, dear listener, I know I've hammered on about them recently, but I'm going to talk to them about them shortly. But, you know, to wrap up this pedal, it's obviously fantastic. Congratulations at making it. Dear listener, you have to make sure you check it out if you haven't already. But also, what a great time, Blake, to release something in this sort of style. I feel like the last year, I know that everyone was saying like last year was Year of the Rat, but I felt like there were an awful lot of Big Muff style pedals coming out. And it went from being a type of fuzz that I think had almost been slightly sidelined, certainly with, you know, a lot of musicians that I see, to suddenly being the absolute go-to once again. It seems like a popular time for that pedal type.
Well, it's funny that you mention it. The Rat circuit was the original thing we had thought about, because mostly because of the Pizza Rat meme that went around. You know, I don't know if you saw that, but there was a video of a rat pulling a piece of pizza around a New York subway, and everyone's like, "Ah, Pizza Rat!" La, you know. So we thought, oh, that might be kind of funny to incorporate. Plus, they already make a brilliant rat in the Woodcutter, and so it was like, maybe we'll do a rat. But then when we really got to thinking about like Slice of Pie, Triangle, like, no, it's got to be a, and Big Muff. The Big Muff is one of my very favorite circuits of all time, and I wish I owned all of them. It's just, I absolutely love the Big Muff. So it did morph due to the pizza concept. Actually, it was originally going to be a rat. I'm glad that it's not. I love rats, but I'm happier that it's this.
Me too. And as you said, it makes a great bass drive as well, so that's more exciting as well, because Big Muffs can be one or the other. They can either be great or terrible at that sort of thing.
Yes, definitely. And I'm very happy to say that it's great on everything.
Excellent. Well, I, you know, once again, congratulations. What a fantastic, unique, original and brilliant pedal, you know. And of course you were the mastermind behind it, Blake. Of course it was you.
You know, I have to give credit where credit is due. This was really a big year project that they allowed me to be a part of, rather than the other way around. And in Grant's own words, it was like, well, we couldn't do a pizza pedal and not have Blake involved. Well, but really, they are the driving force behind this. A lot of times with the collaborations I've done in the past, it's been a lot more of maybe me coming up with the concept and me coming up with the plan to release and me coming up with some of that stuff. Whereas Grant would call me, and it would just be like me going, yep, uh-huh, yep, yep, yes, yes, that's what we should do, absolutely, here's an idea, yes, 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 yes. Like, it was just like he's reading my mind. So gotta give credit where it's due there, because no one else could have pulled this off in the way that they did. And I also should take just one more second and let everybody know, We've had some people try to flip these on Reverb for some reason.
Really? Already? Oh, Reverb, the ultimate flipping site. Was it Mark Packham? I bet it was Mark Packham.
It was probably Mark Packham. And eBay and other places. If you want to pay way more money for it for no reason, feel free to purchase those. But I just feel like a good PSA is in order to say, like, we're going to keep this as a production run. So we're not planning. All the other Tone Mob collabs have been very limited. As long as there is interest in this pedal, we're going to keep producing them. So if you want to pay extra for something that is in production, go ahead. But if you don't, just go to Big Ear and they'll take care of you.
Very cool. Yes. The flipping thing is ridiculous, but I'm so glad you're keeping it as a production model. That's super exciting times, Mr. Blake. But I did want to talk about Grez, because Blake, you introduced me to Grez like a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think that was the second time. I can't remember if you were on my show or I was on your show.
My show, yeah, and it was just the two of us, and I said, I was like, well, I think it was late in the podcast, and I was like, what guitar is getting you excited at the moment? What, you know, have you discovered anything ridiculous that I need to know about? And you spoke about Grez.
Yeah, and I still feel the exact same way. Like, the honeymoon never wore off. I play that guitar nearly every day, and the Mendocino baritone in particular, I just think it's one of the most unique sounding guitars on the planet. And the build quality is great. Barry's a super nice guy. And, you know, one of the most exciting things right now, and I'm not, this isn't, this is just to help him out, but he's asked me to connect him with different content creators and artists who maybe never thought about this guitar before, maybe aren't baritone people, or maybe just would help him get exposure to new audiences. And it's been really fun to be like, oh, you guys are in for a treat, you know, because there's like a touring Mendocino baritone that's going around right now to different YouTubers and stuff. And they're everybody that's gotten it so far is just like, this guitar is insane. I'm like, I know.
It is. Yeah. It's they are very good. I couldn't be happier with the Mendocino that I've got here. It is it's absolutely incredible. And you know, I'm really tempted to pick up one of the juniors.
Me too.
The Mendocino Junior. It looks lovely. Dear listener, if you go onto Grez Guitars on Instagram, Grez Guitars, one word. Recently, Barry's posted a Mendocino Junior custom in a gorgeous sort of through blonde with a lovely, very simple old school torque guard, and it's really very, very good. It's very good. I think I'm gonna have to get one. Naomi, I don't think you were on the pod. I can't remember if you were on the podcast when we talked about it. But if you go onto grezguitars.com and you go into gallery, you'll find by scrolling through is it in here? Is it real time? Me trying to work out. There are also some basses.
I think I was on that episode.
Were you on that yeah. episode? Yeah. So. I can't remember where it is on the
on the website. Was it not me that found the bass, Joe?
Was it? Oh, that's terrible.
I think good to know how cared about I am around here. yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. I mean, I'm a huge fan of all and everything I've seen of his builds. I just think it's so clearly just the work of an artist and craftsman. The Compact Club, I think, is still an absolutely stunning model that I would love to see being played. I've not seen a demo of it just yet, but yeah, I too am now looking for said bass.
Yeah, yeah, I can't remember where it was.
It did exist, didn't it?
It did. Well, it's definitely
if we're both
did.
Remembering it then.
Well, I tell you why it certainly did, because we saw a lovely sort of big jazz box single cut hollow body. Short scale fretless. It was absolutely gorgeous on the website. And I was like, yeah, I might actually have to inquire about that. Friend of the podcast and podcast listener, Dustin Babbitt. It's too many letters at the end of your name.
Babitsky. Come on.
These names don't exist over here. I don't have to. Everyone's called Jones or Smith. I don't have to worry about all these sorts of things. But yes, Dustin was like, yeah, I've got one of those basses, and he sent me some pictures and a little video demo, and my goodness,
oh, wow.
It's absolutely fantastic. I'll have to send it to you, Naomi, but it's weird. It's like his one is the most figured top I've ever seen on like a vintage style guitar, but still just on the side of tasteful, like, you know, not quite classic enough for me, but still just on the side of tasteful. A pair of jazz pickups in there, which actually make all the difference, even though they take away from that classic look a little bit, still with the fretless 30-inch scale. They're wonderful. Guitar Nerds are teaming up with Music Nomad, and I really think, nerds, you need to check out musicnomadcare.com. We've spoken about all their wonderful guitar maintenance products on the podcast, and I really can't emphasize how important it is to look after your gear and how easy Music Nomad make that for you with things like their how-to advice center and their setup hub. Music Nomad have been around for a little over 10 years, and in that time they've become one of the most recognized brands for guitar tech gear. They're available worldwide in every guitar store you can think to name, and it's for a good reason. All their products are professional grade quality. Every tool and even the cases the tools come in are designed for proper, rugged, on the road use. Make sure you check out what all the buzz is around Music Nomad, as they are redefining and raising the bar for equipment care. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com or follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare.
Yeah. I've found it on the site. It was of course in the custom gallery.
Oh, the custom. I'm sitting here scrolling through. I'm like, I haven't seen this bass, so I'm looking
No, it absolutely exists, thankfully. Yeah, CRB-15 is the model. And of course he states underneath it how any of the appointments can be spec'd to your taste. So but I mean, what a canvas to go from if that is the example we're being given. Stunning looking bass. Yeah. Very you, Joe. I could entirely picture that being
I am on your wall or
in your hands.
I really, really am thinking about it. It's either that or a junior. I definitely am about to buy something else. And, I've sort of just put a deposit down on one thing, but I'm in a position where it's not too much of a deposit. I could definitely bench it for a little while if something else came up. And other than, that Grez is a strong contender. It's very, very cool. And I agree, very me. But the other thing that I saw recently, I bought like a J. Douglas Blunderbird. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah,
name?
I do remember them. Yeah.
Really great, lovely sort of little Yorkshire-based company, and he makes really interesting, very classic sort of modern twist, classic style, mostly basses. Does some guitars as well. And this morning or today, I saw that he'd done.
Ooh, that's spicy. I like that.
Yeah.
Those are cool. Yeah.
Oh, the Blunderbird, do you mean?
Or yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're really good. Yeah. So I've got a really nice sort of reverse Blunderbird, which he actually said was because he accidentally cut it back upside down. So it's got the slightly longer lower horn than upper horn on my one, which I actually think makes it look fantastic. And it's really lovely, great sounding, 32-inch scale. I've got a set of Labella flats on it. It's everything. Like, you palm mute that with a plectrum and you've got, just absolute sort of 60s tone all day long. But this morning I realized that he'd posted a commission that he'd done, which is very much a Rickenbacker 4003 style instrument. And it looks absolutely fantastic. He did a 32-inch scale, which is very much his vibe. He has done some 34s, but he does a lot of 32-inch stuff. That seems to be his thing. I'm thinking about commissioning one of those because it looks very cool in the lovely sort of vintage white with black binding that you occasionally get the 4001s in. But it is very cool. That's a strong contender for me. Other than the Grez, I could definitely be talked into something like that. But yeah, across the board, kind of everything he does seems to be interesting, unique, and weird. I love it when he has a few models. Have you seen the ones in like the weird custom finishes that he does? The sort of the very much 60s circular patterns.
Looking through.
I have done. Yeah.
More
are those
stuff.
Are those like printed finishes, or are they like pieced wood? Because they're all really woody tones.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I assume they're printed. I mean, on one of the ones, he's got a Blunderbird similar to mine, but with a printed finish on it. Only it has like a floating brass bridge. That's it. I love it. Just one brass bar. That's it. Sorry.
Oh,
you
amazing.
Know, so it's just
yeah.
And the volume knob looks like a doorknob off of a cabinet, and there's no tone control.
Love it.
That's what I'm talking about.
I think sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, I'm looking through the Instagram right now. I don't think they're printed. These look very much done like full solid wood. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but
they do, don't they? That's why I was saying that.
Oh well, there's the circular ones, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the one I mean. Yeah, those circular designs. But
I wonder if it's wrapped. Like it's maybe.
A wallpaper.
Yeah. It's hard for me to know. I'm trying to find a process shot because he has some process shots here. And...
Yeah, possibly. But it's, they're very cool. Very, like, incredibly reasonably priced. John, who builds the guitars, who is Jay Douglas, is a lovely fella. So well worth checking out, dear listener, if you're in the market for something classic. But it's high up on my list. That, a Grez, another jazz bass. I don't know. I'm going to end up sort of somewhere around those.
Clearly, you need all of it.
I do. I do need all of it. I do need all of it. Last week, I did. I shared a little post of this on the group. Last week, I played a gig with my jazz bass, and I'd recently put the ashtray covers on it. And I said on a previous podcast, I was like, you know, the problem with having ashtrays on your jazz bass is when you hit the bass hard, the strings rattle against the ashtrays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it doesn't work. An annoying clank.
Exactly. So what I did was I took the ashtrays off and I put electrical tape on the underside of them to prevent that. And it worked. I was like, fantastic. This is going to be brilliant. I'll put these ashtray covers back on. And I didn't have a band practice with the ashtray covers before I then went to do the gig. And my goodness, the amount of times I smashed my hand into the ashtray covers instead of hitting the strings. I nearly injured myself. It was impossible. It was my playing was not on point at all. I kept missing things. Ashtray covers get in the way. And welcome back to One Hot Minute, a segment where each week I take a minute of your podcast listening time to demo a piece of gear that I'm excited about. Over the last few weeks, we've been talking about the KMA Chief Disruptor, KMA's Swiss Army Knife Big Muff style fuzz. This week, I'd like to talk about the KMA Pylon, their ATM noise gate. I realise noise gates aren't the most exciting of effects, but with all things KMA, they've crammed a whole bunch in to make this pedal comprehensive, feature-packed, and just generally very useful for the actual application of a noise gate. Other than operating as a noise gate, the Pylon also has 30 decibels of boost, which is very useful in the post-drive position, so you don't have to, you know, slam your distortions too much and lose all clarity from your drive tone. It also has a very useful effects loop for targeting noisy pedals or using four cable method to assign the noise gate just to your drive channel. But my favorite feature is the channel switching input or output, which allows you to use the Pylon as your amp channel switcher in addition to turning on and off the pedal. No one's going to want a noise gate assigned to their clean tone, so being able to double this pedal up to switch channels and engage the effect simultaneously is an excellent idea and exactly the sort of smart thinking KMA apply to all their pedals. Now let's check it out. In this sound clip, I'm playing a riff through without the gate. Then I'll engage the effects. I'll engage the gate. The boost is really lovely and articulate in this. It's at the end of an HM2 style distortion and the gate itself cleans everything up without muddying the tone.
And wait, sorry, had your last rehearsals been no ashtray and then they went on, but just, that is risk town for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge cover. Yeah. The bridge cover in particular for me is a horror point. I can't really play with them.
I get it and I
appreciate how they look. I really do. But they're not within practical playing range for me.
I didn't think it through. I didn't think through the fact that I had a song that I had to palm mute.
Oh. Exactly. Good luck to you. So what did you do? Did you palm mute at like the 12th fret instead?
No, I just had to play really softly instead to try and deal with it. It was... that was the other thing that I forgot. It fed back every time I turned on my drive pedal. I was getting loads of feedback because, of course, the other problem is I've got active EMGs. Mm-hmm. And so those being like, that's the same as cupping a mic, essentially.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's the same as you're literally showing them a mirror, basically.
Why did no one tell me this?
You didn't ask me.
I was going to say, maybe you didn't tell anyone of your ridiculous plans.
The thing about it
for the aesthetic.
Yeah. It's all about the aesthetic with that. Every time I have played one, and you know, maybe if that's what I had started playing on, that it would have been okay. But it's really only for looks, in my opinion, because functionally it's a terrible idea. I don't understand it. But I do love looking at one with the ashtray and the bridge cover. I just think it, and the pickup cover. I don't know. I love how it looks, but it's a functional nightmare. Don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, it looks wonderful and showy, and I get the era that it kind of sprung from in a design sense, but it's like the literal opposite to a ramp for me. Like, I don't like how ramps look between pickups, but mm-hmm. in terms of their practical use, I 200% get it that you've, you know, why wouldn't you give yourself more thumb range in the case of bass so that you can have more kind of dynamic room to play with across the right-hand positioning. So,
Exactly. And that's the problem. Why do all the things that make playing easier look bad and all the things that make playing harder look good? It's not fair.
I mean, speak for yourself. They make fret wraps in leopard print these days. Maybe ramps are the same. Who knows? Yeah. I'm sure there's an aesthetic solution somewhere out there, Joe. But perhaps ashtrays are not it, as you've seen.
Ugh. Yeah. I damn it. Fine. Whatever. It's fine. I'm gonna get over it. I realize now. I understand why people have taken them off pretty much since, you know, 1961 when.
Yeah, when they were first and last relevant and cool.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, sorry, Leo, this isn't gonna cut it. You're a genius. You are a genius, but you know, sometimes you get things wrong. And this is one of those times.
Yes. Oh well. Well, you know, I live and I learn. I live and I learn. Anyway, Gibson have done something pretty cool this week, which is unusual, right? I mean, we're at a time where Fender keep releasing all these great new guitars just for people. Well, it also seems to be whenever Fender release something, a signature model, it's for someone new, relevant, up and coming. And, you know, whenever I check out Gibson news, it's like, Dave Mustaine has a new signature model. It's like, oh, who cares about this? Why are you still doing this, Gibson? What are you doing? What are you doing? Slash has got another list, but why? He doesn't need another one. it's terrible, but they've done something very cool. Gibson are celebrating the life of rock and roll trailblazer Sister Rosetta Tharpe with a new merch line and a YouTube mini documentary, which I thought was great. It's a pint sized. You've got to go watch it, dear listener. A pint sized, like 12-minute or 8-minute or something like that, documentary that just gives you a great little overview of Sister Rosetta Tharpe. If you don't know anything about her other than the train station, the legendary train station performance with her 61 Les Paul SG, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, a great little overview and a load of merch. I did want a signature model, you know, or, you know, something that like
was
that
my,
to come out.
That was my thing. I was like, so you're doing this big Sister Rosetta push. She has this iconic, iconic guitar. And we're going to get a merch line? I'm like, you know,
the story's
Gibson,
a little off there.
I am a Gibson guy. I have multiple Gibson guitars. I grew up just as a massive Gibson fan, and I still love a lot of what they do. But there are so many times, even in this new era, where I'm like, you guys were almost there. You had it, and you just couldn't quite seal the deal. From the Maestro pedals launch to this, I'm just like, you're right. You're on the right path. And then you just stop short of actually doing the whole thing. And then they say the same thing. Oh, it's coming. And that would be like if we did all the box and stuff for the pizza pedal and then just put it in a regular enclosure and called it a day. You know?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a little bit, yeah. It's a shame that it's half there. I mean, they've done a very cool strap. They've done like a white strap with "sister" written in gold text, which I think is very cool. They've released a bowling jacket. Is that what you'd call that? They've released a bomber jacket, I would call it, that says "Sister Rosetta Tharpe" on the back in the sort of in that.
It's kind of a there's a name for those. I don't remember what it is. It's not a members only jacket. That's a different thing. But
right,
it's like a 50s, you know, the elastic around the waist and neck and wrists. Yeah, go find a picture of it. We're not doing a very good job of describing.
But yeah, they've done some other cool things. There's like a load of pin badges. There's a little flag. There's even a little Axe Heaven have made a little replica of the 61 Les Paul SG Custom, which is very, very cool. I just wish it had been coupled with a Gibson. Is there an Epiphone version of this?
There's an Epiphone version, which is cool. Don't get me wrong. It is very cool. But let's do it. Let's do the real thing. It says like the Epiphone version was developed with the Gibson Custom Shop. And I think that's cool, and it's cool that more people will be able to afford it and all that. But like, let's see a real custom shop. Let's see a real custom shop version. Let's do it.
Is the Epiphone version, does it have the trem?
I got to look it up. I'm reading through the article right now.
Because it feels like Epiphone have done that model guitar for a long time. They've done a 3 pickup, an SG Custom in white, you know, for forever. Like, you know, it was always the showy off kid at school who bought one of those. You know, they've been around for ages. G400. I don't think it does have.
Here we go. The Sister Rosetta Tharpe collection. No, I'm not seeing it. I can't find a picture of it.
No, I'm pretty sure it doesn't. GAC, however, my old stomping ground, GAC do have a 60th anniversary, because I guess last year would have been that. So the 60th anniversary Les Paul SG Custom in Polaris white with the proper vibratrem and the gorgeous 3 gold humbuckers. That is available, but you know, that is £5,400. So it's that's a pretty premium priced Gibson, but still very cool. I'm glad at least that Gibson are kind of doing a little documentary. I think that's kind of
yes,
a cool
that
thing
is very
too.
Cool. Yeah, very, very cool. Much needed.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I mean, the documentary talks about the fact that Sister Rosetta Tharpe still, even today, seems a little bit glossed over. I find it hard to. It's hard to tell from the inside, isn't it? Like when you're aware of Sister Rosetta Tharpe and all this stuff, like you know. The origins of rock and roll that she is responsible for and the iconic performances, you know, when you're kind of aware of it already, it's hard to know if people are globally aware of it. I don't know if she still doesn't quite have the respect that she should do as the trailblazer that she was, but you know, I hope this goes towards it.
Yeah. And it's all the more reason to keep telling her story and keep, I guess keep spreading the, excuse the pun, gospel of her amazing work, having been, you know, gospel's first superstar, and I don't know, the barriers she broke down for women in music as well.
Well, yeah, there's so many barriers,
and for queer people of color in music. Beyond that, like, you know, there was multiple levels that she multiple kind of barriers that she really smashed with her kind of her fame and success.
I feel like if she was around today, she'd be breaking barriers. Let alone, you know, the fact that she would have been, you know, she would have been touring around like a segregated version of America. You know, mm-hmm. they were talking about in the documentary the fact that she had a tour bus because in some of the places that she was playing, she wasn't allowed in the hotels. So her backing band, who were white men, would stay in the hotels, and they had to have a tour bus because that's where she would have to stay. So you know, it's just stuff like that. Just the things that she was responsible for were incredible, and it's not just the fact that she was a black woman who was queer in the time that she was making this music. It's just also the fact that it was gospel, and she was one of the first people to manage to appeal to both a gospel audience and a secular audience, like have music that transcended outside of that genre.
Yeah, absolutely. It really speaks to the power of her art, I guess, and the uniqueness.
Ellen, let alone like all of the obvious groundbreaking things she did, just being herself, the music itself, even if you never saw her, you had no idea who she was, just listen to the music and think about the time she was making that music. Totally groundbreaking. Completely nothing had been heard like that before by anybody. So yeah, she really is a founder, if not the founder, of rock and roll as we know it. And to speak to your earlier point about, is she in the general public lexicon? No, I don't think she is. I don't think I even heard about her until 8 years ago. And I've, you know, grown up with the guitar.
Yeah, I probably think the same. Yeah, I think about the same for me. Yeah.
And that's absurd. There's no reason that should have. When I found out about her, I was in Nashville, or maybe it was when we were in Memphis. I can't remember which musical tour I was on during that vacation, but we were on a tour of some. It might have been the Stax Museum. I can't remember. And I watched a video of her playing, and I was like, "Who is this lady? Why have I never heard of her? Hmm. This is incredible." And so, yeah, I would say no. In general, most people don't know who she is. I think most guitar players know who she is now, but outside of that, I don't think the general public fully understands or appreciates her contributions.
That is a shame. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just all those achievements and, you know, plus the music. Like her performances are just incredible. Like you think about when she was, how much energy she was putting into this at the time, where that just wasn't how music was being presented. And mm-mm, if you watch some of her live performances, this is just a little thing, but I love that she does it. She is constantly just stopping playing guitar, like halfway through a little bit, just so she can use her hands to point or clap or something. And she'd come back and just like bend one note. And then she's, you know, but it was just so rock and roll. It was so like, she didn't care, and I love that. I also love that the guitar is wildly out of tune in a lot of the live performances. There's that proper sort of rock and roll twang to an out of tune guitar, and it's very cool.
Yeah, perfectly imperfect.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Yes. We were going to talk about some news things. Oh God, there's so many more things to talk about that we haven't. But one of the things we'll try and talk about is this new JHS take on the DoD the preamp, the 250 preamp. But before we go into that, Naomi, I want to talk about you're selling your meat box. This before we started the podcast, dear listener, we were talking about this 250. And Naomi, you're selling your meat box. I just think that's such a rare, cool, unique, sought after pedal. It's a bit scary, don't you think, that you're getting rid of it without, you know, there's not that many around.
No, I know it is. It's one of those things, though, like the term that I hate to love of thinning the herd. I'm trying to be quite realist about, like, you know, maybe looking at setting certain amounts of time, and if I haven't reached for a pedal in said amount of time, then maybe it's a good idea for it to move on to someone who will get a ton of use from it, you know. Mm. I did get some great use from the Meatbox. I think it does a particular task extremely well. It will make any front of house engineer in your path absolutely hate you, or at least feel a very particular crippling anxiety before they put you through the PA, and during and after. No, I think it's a mighty pedal. It's really, yeah, I've struggled to find other pedals that do what the Meatbox does quite as well as it does. But for me, I think it was time to move it on just for now. I'm saying that knowing like its value may just continue to go up. I was quite surprised actually how much it had gone up. So it was the reissue that I had.
Digitech owned DoD Meatbox.
Yes, I never had the OG, which weren't its controls like flank and loin? None of them actually represented the parameters function.
Yeah,
that was
it was just meat words.
That was DoD at the time. That was like their thing.
That was their vibe. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I can't remember what like the grunge pedals like. I think one of the labels like butt or something like that. Yeah.
I'm here for that. So yeah. If in fact, Joe, if I rebuy it, maybe I'll make a point of going OG rather than reissue. But yeah, you're right. Always a little scary letting go of something like that. But yeah, I think the OC5 has won my heart for now, if I'm honest. I'm quite happy with it in my rig.
It does do a lot of things, and I guess it can deal with that Meatbox territory while still being versatile enough to do some other bits and bobs.
Exactly. And also, you know, scary as it is, I'm trying to respond in my gear collection to sort of projects I'm involved in currently. And I'm a little bit far away from kind of the darker, synthier stuff that I was doing around the time of getting the Meatbox initially.
I see. Yeah, looking up the Meatbox on Reverb has led me down a bit of a rabbit hole of other DoD pedals from that era. I have never heard of the Flashback Fuzz. That is very reasonably priced. The Vibrathans,
that one's it's the Flashback's all right. It's not my favorite. That's why they're reasonably priced. Not because they're not my favorite, but because they're generally not super
Blake
favorite.
Says.
Blake says so we price it here. I wish that was the case. I would be so wealthy.
It's me, the algorithm.
It's me. Hello. My name's Al. Algorithm. The Flashback Fuzz, it's like one of those ones that should be cool, and then you play it and you're like, meh.
A little underwhelming.
Yeah, I mean, but they do have a lot of good stuff.
Sure. Do you mean it's like a little bit of a kind of one-trick pony type vibe, or... It gives a better impression until you actually hear it sonically.
Yeah, that's the thing. I just find it very underwhelming in general, which sucks because I'm actually a big DoD fan, and I think a lot of their stuff is very underrated. They have an analog delay from that era that's very, very good. The FX65 stereo chorus sounds like absolutely amazing. They've got some very cool things. All from all eras, but that era has some hidden gems still to this day.
What about the grind rectifying overdrive?
I wish I could speak to that. I don't know. But I like the sound of it.
It sounds very helpful.
£215 on Reverb, so I assumed it was a sought after one. Bear in mind the, you know, the envelope filter is like 75 quid. The analog delay pedal that you spoke about, Blake, is 125. Even a Vibrathang's only 70 quid. You know, they're not going for an awful lot of money, but the grind...
That delay's still only 125, really?
Yeah. Mm.
That's a good deal. I'm here to tell you. It sounds awesome.
Maybe I should get... No, I just sold my Ibanez AD9, which is just... It's the same. It's going to be the same. There's not going to be a difference.
It's not going to be the same.
It's going to be close enough. I sold them all. I'm just keeping the DM2. That it does everything. That does everything I need. I don't need another analog. Do I need another analog delay?
Yes, you do. You do. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'm telling you.
DoD.
Speaking of DoD, fantastic analog delays from the new era. Huh? The Rubberneck is still so good. The Rubberneck rules.
What an underrated pedal. What an underrated weird delay pedal that you can do some great things with. Having that the second foot switch that operates as regeneration, it's just so... I can't really describe what it does. It's a kind of... Yeah, well, it just... Yeah, it's like a feedback-y thing. So it's like being able to mess around with your repeats and.
Well, I can tell you what it does. It maxes out those controls automatically. So when you mash it, it's like the same thing as just cranking up your repeats and your regen control. So it just immediately goes into self-oscillation.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And then the rubberneck, the actual rubberneck feature, I think gets overlooked sometimes. And that's the one I'm not exactly sure what it's doing, but it sounds like the name. It goes like, when you step on it. So it's...
Ah, yes, the Boyo pedal.
Yes, it sounds like it's got a rubber neck, you know? I don't know what it's doing exactly, but I like it a lot. It's really very cool. Good.
I like a delay pedal with a gain control as well. That's old school.
Yeah.
Very fun.
Definitely. Dial in some quench.
Yeah, they are very good. But yes, we should talk about not about DOD, but about about JHS, who have introduced this the DOD inspired overdrive preamp, which has totally passed me by. Like all the time I hear 60 Cycle Hum talking about, you know, the 250, the preamp 250, the DOD preamp 250, and it seems to be a big thing that people care about, and it has totally passed me by. And I don't think Matt's ever had one. I don't think I've ever had a conversation with Mark about them. Like, I don't remember them being especially present at GAC, and so I don't know if this is just the microclimate of me, or if they just haven't made a big impact in the UK in comparison to the US.
Naomi, what's your take before I give mine?
No, go on ahead. I feel you'll my take would be similar to Joe's. I feel like it's not made. I certainly was a little bit surprised to see a clone of it, basically from another company. Let's say it wouldn't have struck me previously as having made a massive splash.
Yeah, so I think this must be a regional thing then, because it's a very big deal in the States. Basically, like, if you don't like Tube Screamers, which that would be me, you like got your first overdrive, there's a good chance it was an MXR Distortion Plus or a DOD 250, which are really close to the same. They're very, very similar circuits. In fact, I don't remember what the difference is, but I feel like it's like one diode or something. Don't quote me on that. I know they're very, very close. But the DOD 250, I think, has a little bit more of the prestige, if you want to call it that, just because, you know, Yngwie Malmsteen famously used one. And it's kind of funny because people buy that back in the day. They would buy the gray box DOD 250 thinking they're going to sound like Malmsteen, not realizing that he's, you know, running it into some high gain Marshalls.
Yeah. You know,
like it's only part of it, because if you buy the Malmsteen drive you plug it into a Fender Deluxe, you're going to be very disappointed because it does not sound like that at all. I love the 250. I have basically the earliest generation after the gray box. I have a yellow box 250 that I got years ago, and every time I plug that in, I'm constantly surprised by how good it sounds. So many people that I know love the 250. Chris Benson of Benson Amps loves this 250. Josh Scott clearly loves this 250. 60 Cycle Hum with Pelican Noiseworks, my friend Leon. I think, Ryan, hurry up and make the new graphic, because the 5050 is one of the coolest DOD 250s on the market, because it's a dual 250 like the Earthquaker Gray Box. But they're independently switchable with independent controls, and you can set them differently and then stack them, or, you know, have two different settings. It's the coolest 250 on the market, in my opinion. And, you know, it's waiting on a podcaster, so it might be a while. but it's awesome. And yeah, it's got kind of a cult following over here. It's the best way I can describe it sonically is like it's crispy. Like it's very crispy and like very defined. The original versions, I think, can get a little top-end heavy when you max the game out and get a little bit, you know how a DS1, if you have the tone control up too high, it's don't like that. The 250 can do that a little bit in the top end with the gain all the way up. But you back it off to about 75% and you play with your guitar's volume control, and they're such a simple circuit that sounds so magical. It's kind of like sonically it's completely different, but it's similar to like when you have a really good fuzz face and that's all you need. You just need your guitar and that fuzz face, and you just kind of play around with your dynamics. The 250 is like the overdrive version of that for me.
Like the magic wand pedal of its type for your board.
Yeah.
You could say.
Make gooderer, but it's not subtle. You know, some of the make gooderers are like, ooh, this adds a little sparkle to my tone. Like the 250 definitely is like, this is crunching my signal. It is definitely an overdrive, you know.
But it's capable of doing some sort of tone sweetening though, right? If you just use the level control and keep the gain down.
For sure. For sure. It does really well. I would classify it as where it really shines is in the light to medium drive ranges is where it really brings the magic. And so you can definitely make it clean, but it's a dirt pedal for sure.
I see. Well, you know, it's fantastic that JHS have introduced the overdrive preamp. This version of you know, dear listener, you have to obviously go watch the JHS video all about this and the discovery, and actually the 60 cycle amp demo is very good as well. But I love it when JHS continue to do these things. When Josh kind of hits the nail on the head time after time, expanding and reintroducing legendary old pedals back into his range. And of course, you know, it's $179 for his version of the pedal. So it's not premium priced or anything like that. He's not, which is something you could go after if you're making, here is a version of the very first ever legendary DOD 250, here it is in a similar looking enclosure and whatever. You could have gone for a premium price point and still, you know, people would have bought it because the originals are upwards of £500, but he's introducing them at such a reasonable price. He's nailed it again. What a great product.
I think what's great about Josh, well, there's a lot of great things about Josh, but he is such, I know he comes across this way on YouTube, but if you talk to him in real life, it's even more apparent. He loves the history of all this stuff. He loves the minutiae and like, why did they use those diodes instead of those diodes? And like, why did this happen this way? Why did blah, blah, blah? Like, he loves finding out about the total minutiae that nobody else would ever have the patience for. So when he comes out with something that is a recreation, you know that he's put the time in to make it right. And I'm really excited about it. If I didn't have this old yellow box one, I would have already bought this thing, because for the same reason you said, the gray box versions are $400 or $500 and maybe even more. I haven't looked in a while. So this is going to be cool. I'm sure it is.
Yeah, super exciting. We will see. We'll see the sort of impact that this is going to have on the marketplace. Maybe this will be the year of the 250 preamp. Maybe we'll get loads of those this year. We'll see. We'll wait and see. But that is all the time we have on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. You can, of course, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds for an entire extra episode every week. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you'll get this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special episodes and our entire back catalogue, and $10 gets you the lot. Plus, I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. This week was Week of the Nicks, so welcome to Nick Rivett and Nick Moran, who both join us on the Patreon. Next week, it's going to be Tom's, followed by Sebastian's. So if your name is Sebastian, then the week after next is the time to join us on Patreon. You can find us on all your favorite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Good night.
Lederhosen.
Daniel Walker, Ben Harder, Drummond Brown, Holly Simpson, John Conaway, Eric Vaughan, Russell Healing, Paul Drew, Peter Blair, Ty Allen, Yogi the Guitarist, Kyle Harris, Joe Hart, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Shane Molloy, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Eisler, Gavin Van der Linden, Andy Manley, Robert Butterworth, Scott Utty, Marcus Alkanowaki, Simon Milbourne, Stuart Robson, Christian Van Hansen, Keith Adams, Eric File, Jack Cutmore, Joe Putty, James Storr, Abe Matthews, Ken Sayers, Kytopia the Man, John Anglin, Ross Edwards, Stephen Borg, Aaron Sherman, Dave Lee, Jake Gray, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Losek, Derek Rich, Blake Wyland, Rob Norvig, Shady Short, Steve Merkel, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Robin Smith, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, and Moog Grammy.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.